Thank you. Thank you. Part 2. Having driven the horses to the riverside where they were to graze, Nestor dismounted and unsaddled. Meanwhile, the herd had begun gradually to spread over the untrampled meadow, covered with dew and by the mist that rose from it and the encircling river. When he had taken the bridle of the piebald yelling, Nestor scratched him under the neck, in response to which the gelding expressed his gratitude and satisfaction by closing his eyes. "He likes it, the old dog," muttered Nestor. The gelding, however, did not really care for the scratching at all and pretended that it was agreeable merely out of courtesy. He nodded his head in assent to Nestor's words. But suddenly, Nestor, quite unexpectedly and without any reason, perhaps imagining that too much familiarity might give the gelding the wrong idea of his importance, pushed the gelding's head away from himself without any warning and, swinging the bridle, struck him painfully with the buckle on his lean leg, and then, without saying a word, went the hillock to a tree stump beside which he generally seated himself. Though this action grieved the piebald yelling, he gave no indication of it, but leisurely switching his scanty tail, sniffed at something and, biting off some wisps of grass merely to divert his mind, walked to the river. He took no notice of whatever the antics of the young bears, colts and foals around him, who were filled with the joy of the morning. And, knowing that, especially at his age, it is healthier to have a good drink on an empty stomach and to eat afterwards, he chose a spot where the bank was widest and least steep. There, wetting his hoofs and fetlocks, dipped his muzzle in the water and began to suck it up through his torn lips to expand his filling sides, and from pressure to switch his scanty tail with its half bald stump. An aggressive chestnut filly was always teased the who always teased the old fellow and did all kinds of unpleasant things to him, now came up to him in the water as if attending to some business of her own, but in reality merely to foul the water before his nose. But the piebald yelding, who had already had his fill, as though not noticing the filly's intention, quietly drew one foot after the other out of the mud in which they had sunk, jerked his head, and stepping outside from the usual crowd, started grazing. Sprawling his feet apart in different ways, and not trampling the grass needlessly, he went on eating without unbending himself for exactly 3 hours. Having eaten till his belly hung down from his steepy skinny ribs like a sack, he balanced himself equally on his 4 sore legs so as to have as little pain as possible, especially in his off foreleg, which was the weakest, and then fell asleep. Old age is sometimes majestic, sometimes ugly, and sometimes pathetic. But old age can be both ugly and majestic, and the gelding's old age was just of that kind. He was tall, rather over 15 hands high, His spots were black, or rather they had been black, but he had now turned a dirty brown. He had three spots, one on his head, starting from a crooked bald patch on the side of his nose and reaching halfway down his neck. His long mane, filled with burrs, was white in some places and brownish in others. Another spot extended down his offside to the middle of his belly. The third, on his croup, touched part of his tail and went halfway down his quarters. The rest of the tail was whitish and speckled. The big bony head, with deep hollows over the eyes, and the black hanging lip that had been torn at something, hung low and heavily on his neck, which was so lean that it looked as though it were carved of wood. The pendant lip revealed the blackish bitten tongue and the yellow stumps of the worn lower teeth. The ears, one of which was slip, hung low on either side, and only occasionally moved lazily to drive away the pestering flies. Of the forelock, one tuft, which was still long, hung back behind an ear. The uncovered forehead was dented and rough, and the skin hung down like bags on his broad jawbones. The veins of his neck had grown knotty and twitched and shuddered at every touch of a fly. The expression of his face was one of stern patience, thoughtfulness, and suffering. His forelegs were crooked to a bow at the knees. There were swellings over both hoofs, and on one leg, on which the piebald spot reached halfway down, there was a swelling at the knee as big as a fist. The hind legs were in better condition, but apparently long ago his haunches had been so rubbed that in places the hair would not grow again. The leanness of his body made all four legs look disproportionately long. The ribs, though straight, were so exposed and the skin so tightly drawn over them that it seemed to have dried fast to the spaces between. His back and withers were covered with marks of old lashings, and there was a fresh sore behind, still swollen and festering. The black dock of his tail, which showed the vertebrae, hung down long and almost bare. On his dark brown croup, near the tail, was a scar, as though of a bite, the size of a man's hand, and covered with white hair. Another scar was visible on one of his shoulders. His tail and hocks were dirty because of chronic bowel troubles. The hair on the whole body, though short, stood out straight. Yet in spite of the hideous old age of this horse, one involuntarily paused to reflect when one saw him. And an expert would have said at once that he had been a remarkably fine horse in his day. The expert would even have said that there once was only one breed in Russia that could furnish such breadth of bone, such immense knees, such hooves, such slender cannons, such a well-shaped neck, and above all, such a skull, such eyes, large, black, and clear, and such a thoroughbred network of veins on head and neck, and such delicate skin and hair. There was something majestic in that horse's figure, and in the terrible union in him of repulsive indications of decrepitude, emphasized by the motley color of his hair and his manner, which expressed the self-confidence and calm assurance that go with beauty and strength. Like a living ruin, he stood alone in the midst of the dewy meadow, while not far from him could be heard the tramping, snorting, and youthful neighing and whining of the scattered herd.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba- don't know. You don't know me, bro. Can't tell me there's a party up there, you know?
I know your face.
Yeah, well, look up the fucking number.
So are you gonna come?
Eventually, babe, eventually.
This is a song about a boxer. Boxer. It's got nothing to do with boxing. It's just a song about a boxer. And it's not even having to do with a boxer, really. It's got nothing to do with nothing. But I fit all these words together, that's all. This is taken out of the newspapers. Nothing has been changed except the words. Killed Davy Moore. Why and what's the reason for? Not I, said the referee. Don't point your finger at me. I could have stopped it in the eighth and maybe kept him from his fate. But the crowd would have booed, I'm sure, at not getting their money's worth. It's too bad that he had to go, but there was pressure on me too, you know. It wasn't me that made him fall. No, you can't blame me at all. Who killed Davy Moore? Why and what's the reason for? Not us, said the angry crowd, whose screams filled the arena loud. It's too bad he died that night, but we'd just like to see a fight. We didn't mean for him to meet his death, we just meant to see some sweat. There ain't nothing wrong in that. It wasn't us that made him fall. No, you can't blame us at all. Who killed Davy Moore? Why and what's the reason for? Not me, said his manager, puffing on a big cigar. It's hard to say, it's hard to tell. I always thought that he was well. It's too bad for his wife and kids he's dead, but if he was sick, he should have said, it wasn't me that made him fall. No, you can't blame me at all. Who killed Davy Moore? Why and what's the reason for? Not me, says the gambling man with his ticket stub still in his hand. My, wasn't me that knocked him down. My hands never touched him, none. I didn't commit no ugly sin. Anyway, I put money on him to win. It wasn't me that made him fall. No, you can't blame me at all. Who killed Davy Moore? Why and what's the reason for? Not me, says the boxing writer, pounding print in his old typewriter, saying boxing ain't to blame. There's just as much danger in a football game, saying fist fighting is here to stay. It's just the old American way. It wasn't me that made him fall. No, you can't blame me at all. Who killed Davy Moore? Why and what's the reason for? Not me, says the man whose fists laid him low in a cloud of mist, who came here from Cuba's door where boxing ain't allowed no more. I hit him, yes it's true, but that's what I'm paid to do. Don't say murder, don't say kill, it was destiny, it was God's will. Who killed Davy Moore? Why and what's the reason for?
if you can afford.